Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to Jumping Bomb Audio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. My name is Taylor, and I am joined, as always, by my good friend and co-host, Kelly. Kelly, what's up with you?
I've had a wild week. I reported the freak to the FBI, and I used a chainsaw yesterday.
You reported a freak to the FBI?
Yeah.
Explain.
So for the past 13 years, this dude has been harassing my friends online. And then for whatever reason, now he finally decided to turn his eyes on me and was trying to break into my Instagram and Twitter accounts. And this happened. I went to the group chat and I'm like, hey, is this happening to anyone else? And another guy who had never been attacked prior to this was like, yep, it's happening to me too. He's like, I'm reporting this freak to the FBI. And I was like, fuck yeah, let's go. And he sent me the form and we both did it.
Interesting. I had someone try and hack into my Nintendo account.
Oh, that sucks.
A couple days ago. Well, I think they did
because
someone logged in. And it was like 1 a.m. on a like Windows computer or something. And I was like, well, that's not me. So I just change my password and like kick myself out of everything. But yeah,
Taylor, if this is related to my weirdo, I'm so sorry.
You never know, because sometimes the weirdos that interact with you, I get, you know, there was a guy long ago who was interacting with you, and I feel like I started catching strays for some reason. So, you know. I mean, I guess we do a podcast together, so it makes sense that they would find me, but I certainly hope not.
Yeah, it took them 13 years to get to me, so I'd hope it would take a little longer to get to you.
Yeah, that is very true. And if they tried it, it didn't really work because, to my knowledge, nothing has happened, and I changed the password and I kicked everyone out, so nice. It should be fine.
Yeah, overnight he made a burner Instagram account with the username to ask me a question, and then immediately deleted it. So I just got the notification of the question, and that was it. And the question was horribly misspelled. I think I understand what he was asking me, which is, "Hey, does this dude you haven't talked to in like 3 years have a new Steam account?"
Interesting. I had someone years ago on Twitter who they said something very offensive, and I feel like I responded being like, hey man, like chill out. And they just like went through my list of people I was following and started like messaging them about me.
Oh god.
But in a way that it was like some of the people were people I didn't know, like personally.
Oh, that's great.
So I had to like message them and say, oh, sorry about this. It's some guy I don't know who's trying to get revenge on me, I guess. Unclear? Question mark. So yeah,
it's like a couple years back when that dude who runs the fake GCW down in Florida messaged Rich and he's like, you got to take this guy off your staff or keep him in line.
Oh, that is that is true. I forgot about that guy. Yeah, that's very funny. Anyway, we're not here to talk about freaks. We're here to talk about the lovely women of Joshi Pro Wrestling. And the first thing we're going to talk about today, we're going to dive deep into a show that just happened mere hours ago, wrapped up less than 12 hours ago from when we are recording. That would be Tokyo Joshi's latest Korakuen Hall show, Prism 24, happened, as I said, on June 9th at Korakuen Hall. I think I saw, I don't know how accurate this number is, I saw that the attendance was 707, which is pretty solid, I think, for this card with two Gaijin challengers. Kelly, I'm very interested to hear what you thought about this show.
It's one of those shows that I think was just fine, but was not great for a Korakuen Tokyo Joshi show.
All right. I thought the same thing. There were some people in the, I was in the Voices of Wrestling Discord last night that now has its own dedicated Tokyo Joshi channel.
Hey!
In the Discord, hanging out there. And there were some much more positive reactions to the show than I was sort of having. Now, I'll say this. I didn't dislike the show, but I thought it was the weakest Korakuen they've had in recent memory, at least.
Yeah.
I'll say that. The first Korakuen show where I don't think I did not go any higher than 3.5 stars on anything.
Hey, me too.
And the last time I think I didn't go at least have at least one 4-star match on a Korakuen, I can't even remember. I would have
it's been a while.
All my notes. It's been a while. You know, nothing was bad. I didn't really dislike anything that strongly, but I thought it was just mainly fine, I would say. But let's dive right into it. The first match, I will say, I usually get the match timings from Cage Match, which has not even been updated yet. So flying a little bit blind here. But the first match was a tag team match. The champions, Daisy Monkey, not defending their titles here, but still winning. The team of Arisa Endo and Suzume defeating the rookie Young Blood team of Runa Okuba and Haru Kazashiro. Kelly, your first match thoughts?
I like this a lot. This was a good opener. The rookies did well, and it kind of gave the match a little bit of juice to have the tag champs in the opener against the youngins. So I enjoyed this. This is a good opener. I went 3.25.
Yeah, I thought it was a solid opener. Liked that sort of the story of the match was that Daisy Monkey really was not too often uncomfortable. They were sort of one step ahead at all times and very in sync. They had some, you know, tag team moves because obviously they're the champions and have been tagging for a long time. I think the one thing about the match is that more and more, I think, you know, Toga has been moved up the card much quicker, but I think in a few years, I'm going to go out on a limb and say Runa might be the star of the class.
You know, I could totally see that.
I don't know, just something about her. As Mr. Haku said on commentary, this is her last match as a 15-year-old. I believe she's turning 16 in the next few days. But I'm just thinking, like, she already feels like she sort of understands it. She feels more and more like, okay, this is definitely someone who is a wrestler. And I think, you know, not in the next 6 months or something, but in 3 years, I think, you know, once she's a little older, she's out of school, and you never know what happens with these young Joshi people who could leave at any moment and retire or whatever. But if she sticks around, I think in 3 years, 4 years, I think she's going to be very good.
Yeah, she's shown so much improvement in such a little bit of time.
Yes, and I think she really has, especially because she's sort of tied to Haru, who is improving, but I think improving in a way that's sort of like, oh yes, you're a very young child.
Yeah.
Who's getting better. And Runa feels much more like, okay, you are skilled at this.
Yeah, like Haru, Haru's good. Runa is potential prodigy.
Yes, Haru is participating and getting better, and Runa is, you know, highly skilled and sticking out. Very much like, I'll tell a story about my own life. My mother, growing up, my mother was very concerned I was not getting enough physical activity. This is, everything I say, you know, I'm about to say is true.
Okay.
She signed me up for gymnastics.
Okay.
With a friend of mine. And I went to this gymnastics class. And after about 2 weeks, my friend, and I sort of say my friend in quotes, he was really my mother's friend's son. Had been moved up like two classes and I was left behind and really never got any better. I was never any good. I did it for like 5 years. I believe some of the teachers openly resented me for being there and not being any good. But anyway, that is not what is happening with Haru. She's better than that. But just reminds me of my friend who then immediately started like competing in high level competitions and was like an amateur gymnast champion for like 5 years.
That's wild.
As I putzed around. Anyway,
that was me in a like second grade going to a summer soccer camp. And then on the final day, I didn't want to do it so bad. So I just cried until my mom let me stay home and watch Dragon Ball.
I had one of the I had some of that soccer time where I got hit in the stomach with a soccer ball very hard, and I was just, they were like, you can get back out there, right? You'll be fine in a couple minutes. And I was like, nope, I won't be.
I got knocked unconscious once playing soccer. It was at a again, I was probably like third grade maybe, and it was a girl in my class's birthday party, and it was like a soccer themed party, and we were at some kind of sports complex, and they had a professional soccer player show up who's played on, I think it was the Milwaukee Rampage, which was like the farm team to, was it the MLS? Is that the soccer league? Yeah. So it's like a farm team to that league. And so at one point, like, I think I was the goalie. And I don't know if dude just forgot that he was playing against children, but he kicked it hard and it went straight at my head and knocked me out cold. And then like I wake up and I'm like just looking up at the lights. And I'm like, why am I on the ground? Why is my nose running? And I touch my nose and it's blood. And like everyone's standing around me. I'm like, what happened? And then the dude was just gone. Like, he did not stick around.
Kelly looking up at the lights, as they say.
Yeah. Going out on my back.
Anyway, that was the first match of the evening. The next match was a singles match. Chika Nanase defeating Uta Takami. And it's so funny because the thought I had in the middle of the match, Haku then said on commentary, which was, Uta looks like a three-year-old child and fights like a woman, which is a great summation of what I was thinking, which is that if I showed you a picture of her, you would say, oh, she's going to be like a Palm, Raku, Haruna Neko, like that type. Like, oh, I'm going to come out. I'm going to look cute. I'm going to, you know, do some goofy stuff and, you know, not really like in ring person. I think you would agree, Kelly, right? If I just showed you a picture of her, first
like,
of all,
she looks like she just got home from school.
Yeah. She's tiny. But she fights like a maniac in the ring. Like she's doing that headlock. She's screaming. She's doing a forearm exchange.
And she's so, got a bunch of vodkas deep. That's my man, bar fight energy.
So it's just so funny to me because I'm like, oh, I'm fascinated to see where she ends up. Because like the presentation and the in-ring style don't match. And I think part of this is, you know, could be down to that the in-ring style has gotten better. So people like a Palm, you know, who come in and are like, well, you know, I'm sort of here to be a character and less to be a wrestler, or maybe becoming less and less. I don't know. That's probably not the case. And I'm sure some of these people will end up in that area naturally, but I just thought that was funny. Mm-hmm. And was really my strongest thought about the match. Chica, I don't really know what to think of her. Feels a bit generic at this point. Also standing next to someone who's like, fight, fight, fight. And then a weird finish. I thought the finisher was very strange.
Yeah.
A wrist lock full Nelson.
Yeah, that one, like, if you told me that, like, actually really hurt, I'd totally believe you. But it doesn't look very good.
But, like, what is it in kayfabe, what is it doing?
I think it's, like, stretching out your shoulders, essentially.
But it seems to me like a full Nelson and a wrist lock are meant to do two different things.
Yeah, I think she's, like, I think the idea behind it is that the wrist locks are almost working as, like, a fulcrum to push your shoulders up higher and, like, try and pop them out.
Interesting. All right. I think it's just one of those finishers where I'm like, I guess I understand that. It just doesn't look very good.
No, also. It doesn't. And that's what I mean, where I think, like, if you told, like, if you put that on someone and actually, like, were able to pull it off, like, I think it actually probably would hurt quite a bit, but it looks dumb.
Yeah. Well, what did you think of this match, Kelly?
I thought it was fine. I thought it was kind of rough. Uta needs to work on her look. Like, it doesn't work. Like, again, she just looks like she got home from school and is just a weird little psycho. Nanase's look is better, but she's very bland. I would not have given her a victory so soon.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because, like, when Chino got her first win, like, that was a huge deal. And, you know, it was like a big moment. And now Chica Nanase wins. It's like, okay, whatever.
Well, we'll have to wait and see, I guess. The next match, a lot going on prior to the match. And a lot of my notes have nothing to do with the match. First of all, the match began, Saki and now Kakuta defeating Palm, Harajuku, and Raku is the result. However, the graphic on screen said not Saki, but simply Sock. which was very strange. Then in the introductions, Haku on commentary says, hey, I've gotten a text message from Gaia Hawks. It says, holy fuck, I overslept.
That could have been us today.
Which I was like, wow. Has anyone, I guess probably Maki Ito has. Has anyone else ever said fuck on a Tokyo Joshi show? I don't know. But that made me laugh. New referee. First match here. Happy to see Saki. You know, we talked about that sort of, they don't have a lot of mid-carders here during the last show. And I think that Saki is perfect for that, sort of can come in and be in that mid-card area. Match started with everyone doing their best. Gaia Hawks in the middle of the ring, sleeping. and then I frankly thought this was pretty much a snooze until right at the end when Saki caught Palm doing the Palm to Justice. Like, she leapt up and Saki caught her. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a cool spot.
And once again, Nakakuta saying, not me, brother. I'm no Kelly. I'm not looking at the lights. I'm gonna pin everyone in this company on my way out.
I'm really wondering if she's heading to Marigold.
I don't think she is, because she's also like retiring from acting.
Oh, okay.
It seems like she's like fully leaving. And so okay. I think if that were the case, it would be like, oh, I'm going to focus on acting. But it's like she's retiring from wrestling. She's retiring from acting. So it seems like she's just like, I'm out.
Okay. That makes more sense then.
Kelly, your thoughts?
I thought it was good. Kind of just a perfect little undercard match. Just didn't overstay its welcome. Had some fun stuff. I went 3 stars.
The next match was the Kongs.
Hell yeah.
Aja Kong, Yuki Kong, and Kira Kong defeating Maki Ito, Mihiro Kiryu, and Kaya Torabami. All referred to as the Kongs because both Yuki and Kira came out, along with Aja Kong, of course, wearing the famous face paint. It was very cool, a very fun surprise. And I have to say, I know Yuki Kamifuku's gimmick is that she's very hot, but I thought she looked great in the face paint.
I was going to say the same thing for Kira Summer. Like, I think she should, in the future, incorporate some kind of face paint into her look, because it worked really well for her.
I think Yuki and Kira should keep the face paint and become like Road Warriors style team in Tokyo Joshi, because that would be fun. You know, in terms of the match, I don't know if it was a great match, but I had a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. And it was one of the few times in recent past where it felt like Maki was actually part of the roster.
Yes.
Like, it didn't feel like, oh, here comes this random woman. You know, Kaya had the pigtails in the ponytails, whatever they are, to sort of match her. So it felt like, I was like, oh, she feels very coordinated with the rest of the show, as opposed to usually when it just feels like she's being dropped in some random place.
Mm-hmm. I think there was one bit in the match where they showed Maki, and that was the first time I got a really good look at the GCW Extreme title. That is a wild looking belt.
Oh yeah, very strange. Very weird looking title.
That is a crazy belt.
I will also say that at the end of the match, Maki Ito throwing the bird up to the Kongs, and I thought, oh, they must be building to Maki Ito versus Aja Kong at SummerSlam Princess. And then immediately announced Aja Kong versus Shoko Nakajima.
Yeah. I mean, that'll be a cool match. I'm super into that. But, like, it definitely felt like they were leading up to a Maki Ito. I thought they were going to do Maki Ito versus Aja Kong for like the GCW Extreme title or something.
It was just very weird because they really lingered on it. They really lingered on like, they kept showing Maki throwing up the middle finger. Then Kong saw her. Then Kong did the, you know, kneeling, come on pose that she does. I don't know if that has an official name. So I was like, oh, they're building something. They're building something here. And then it was like, Shoko Nakajima. And I was like, okay. I mean, yeah, a good match. Yeah. But sort of strange. That is July 20th. One thing I did miss before the show started, Wrestle Princess 5 was announced, happening on September 22nd, as well as a Tokyo Joshi pop-up store that's happening in Japan.
Okay.
So yeah,
you know what was kind of a bummer about this match? Kaya Torabami pretty much just tagged in to get pinned, and that was it. That's like all she did, and it's like, damn, I thought she was getting a little momentum.
Well, yeah, and Haku even said late in the match, was like, this is the first time Kaya's been in the match, and I thought, that's very strange.
Yeah.
I don't know. We've talked about her. I'm sort of like, I guess maybe she's busy and they just don't want any to do much with her.
Yeah.
But just seems like a waste of that. Anyway, the next match saw a special guest from AEW, if you can call having two matches in 6 months from AEW. That would be Hikaru Shida defeating Moka Miyamoto. Before the match, Guy Hawks showed up at the commentary table, arriving fashionably late. I thought this was fine. I think that Mocha's still in this weird gray area that her character is this person who's like, yes, I'm going to fight. Like, I have fighting spirit, but then her strikes are very soft. Like, there's some disconnect between she's like, yeah, I'm a fighter. I'm a karate. I do these things. And then everything sort of looks like it doesn't actually hurt the other person.
Yeah.
Also, I have to say, biggest news of the match, Hikaru Shida winning with the Falcon Arrow.
Nobody kicks out of the Falcon Arrow.
Nobody kicks out of the Falcon Arrow. She's done the deal.
Yep.
As it were. But I thought that this was fine.
Yeah, I liked it. Mocha's got to ditch the cape. It's not working. Looks like a little Red Riding Hood showing up. I thought Mocha did well as kind of like the sympathetic baby face who, you know, she wasn't going to win. We knew that. Shida gave Mocha a decent amount of offense, so it wasn't just like a complete squash. But the punch to before the Falcon Arrow looked pretty nasty, so that was cool. Yeah, I did enjoy this. I went 3.5 on it.
The next match was an 8-person tag match. The quartet of Shoko Nakajima, Rika Tatsumi, Yuki Aino, and Mizuki defeating the young team of Wakano Uehara, Toga, Shino Suzuki, and Himawari. I will say that I was thinking about it, then Haku mentioned the insane 10-person tag from last year, which set my expectations very high.
Yeah.
He also said, you know, something big will always happen in these matches. and then that didn't happen either.
No.
I thought it was solid. I thought that really the best part of it was Wakana and Rika in the late stages, getting that sort of extended back and forth. It seemed to me fairly clear that Wakana is the standout, at least among the four of these people. In terms of getting that back and forth with Rika and then taking the fall, which I think will probably lead into things down the line as it sort of did with Miyu last year, not to that degree, but I like that they sort of kept up the Uehara Himawari tag team stuff. I thought that was fun, even if they hit the assisted snap suplex, I think, which didn't look great. but yeah, I thought this was solid. What'd you think?
I thought it was good, but it kind of, I wasn't expecting it to reach the heights of the 10-person tag, but you know, I kind of hoped for a little bit even close to that level of intensity, and this was really kind of just a match. So it was solid, but not what I was hoping for.
The semi-main event was our first of two title matches. This one for the International Princess title. Yuki Arai successfully defending her title against L.A. Taylor.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is what I thought because they started the intro video and she was like, I am L.A. Taylor. And I was like, oh, God. I was like, L.A. Taylor.
Yeah.
Kelly, what'd you think?
So my first note says, with the help of autocorrect, it says, La Taylor looks like Sandman's wife ate her spinach.
Sandman's wife? I don't know that I've ever seen Sandman's wife.
Well, remember when the whole feud in ECW with the Raven stuff?
No,
no,
I don't.
Like when
I have not seen a lot of ECW.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, damn. Where's John? John would know what I'm talking about. Where's Joe? Call up Joe.
I just almost said Sandman's. I almost typed in Sandman's wife into Google. Let's see.
I don't know. They looked very similar to me.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, you talking about Peaches?
I was not aware that her name was Peaches.
Well, there was. Yes, I do know Peaches. I guess I see it. I mean that they're both sort of blonde women. I guess.
I was also very tired at this point in the night, so maybe maybe I'm off base.
Well, if anyone has opinions on that, let us know.
Yeah. I thought this was a decent test for Arai. Taylor came off like a legitimate threat, and she got in a good, like, one or two good near falls, but like nothing amazing. I thought it was fine. I went 3.5 on it.
First, this is one of those things where a different size person comes in and you realize all of your sort of mental Rolodex on these people is wrong. For example, that I thought Yuki Arai was like 5'8".
Yeah.
And then they're like, Yuki Arai is tiny. She's 5'5". I was like, she is? Which was very funny because L.A. Taylor is 6 feet tall. So that I was like, oh, my mental arithmetic is all off.
Well, it's like how I always assumed that Himika would just like tower over me if we were ever to meet.
Oh, yeah. Many years ago, I thought, oh, wouldn't it be fun if they brought in Himika as like the heavy for Britt Baker in AEW? And then I looked it up and she's smaller than Britt Baker. So I was like, well, never mind about that. I don't know why I was thinking about that. But yes, that was another one where I'm like, she's huge. And then I was like, oh, no, it's just that everyone is very small. Yeah. It's the opposite of basketball when you watch basketball and you're like, these are all normal sized people. And then you realize they're all like 6'5". You're just like, oh, they must all be like 5'11". Nope, they're all humongous. Anyway, I thought actually Yuki looked pretty good here. I didn't really enjoy this match, but it wasn't because of Yuki. I thought she did well laying in the strikes. I thought the finally looked actually pretty good. I don't know. It just was a slow moving match for me. I think I was sort of with you, Kelly, in that it was like 12:45 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I was a little bit like, okay, this isn't grabbing me. Okay. So yeah, fine.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich, co-host of the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get right back to your show. Just want a brief moment to tell you about a sponsor that we have here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, Arena Club. Now, Arena Club, man, they're great for card collectors. If you're a card collector out there, this is the read for you. And in this hobby, you know, I know you know, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up. We think, oh man, here's the 86 Michael Jordan Fleer rookie card. It's going to be in this pack. It never is. It's never in that pack. And usually you don't have zero, you have zero transparency on available cards and hit rates. It's all just a shot in the dark until now. Introducing slab packs from arenaclub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each and every one. And when I buy slab packs from Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And I've talked about before, I go to card shows, I grab random packs, I have fun opening them, but I know there's nothing good ever in there. There never is. There's never going to. Why? That's why they're available to buy, because there's nothing good in there. That's not the case anymore with Arena Club slab packs. They're better than those mystery packs because they have a display of available cards. They have a display of the hit rates. They have a display of the grading. You know exactly what you're getting. It's transparent. And Arena Club, more than that, they're an awesome place for collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying. If you're a card collector, you get it all at Arena Club. Now, Arena Club slab packs are revolutionizing the repack game, like we said, with full transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed into your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. And the Arena Club grading process is great. It's fast, it's accurate, it's transparent, with a full grade rationale provided, an explanation of how your card was scored. You're not putting this thing in an envelope, send it out to the mail, and then get back a number. Oh, it's a 6.2. Why? Whatever. Too bad. We just said it was 6.2. No, you get all of the rationale, all the explanation of how your card is scored and how it is graded. And man, Arena Club, whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. But there's even better news here, because right now you can get 10% off your first purchase at Arena Club by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Make sure you use that link to get the 10% off your first purchase. Again, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. That is a crazy offer. That is 10% off of your first purchase of anything. If it's a $400 slab pack, you're getting $40 off immediately just by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. arenaclub.com/VOWnet, 10% off your first purchase. And we appreciate them for sponsoring the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. Now, back to your show.
And then the main event for the Princess of Princess title, Miyu Watanabe defeating the returning Vertical Vixen to retain her title. Thought blasting Vert Vixen's music very loudly at the beginning of the match helped, because I was like, wow, hooray. Like, I was like, okay, I'm into this. It was very loud. Miyu Watanabe getting that giant swing looked great, because when she first started doing it, I was like, I don't think she can even get her off the ground. And then she was like just flinging her around like always. I thought the match sort of fell apart a little near the end. There was the missed kick that happened, and there was a couple other things. There was the weird moment when like Vert Vixen went to do a suplex and Miyu blocked it, and then they just sort of stood there for like 15 seconds. And I was like, is this something supposed to be happening? I also found it odd that the whole thing was like, Miyu has set up this new submission. It's called the Reverse Paradox. And then she used it for about 15 seconds around the end of the match, but Vert easily got to the ropes.
Yeah.
Like, I was sort of like, okay.
Well, that kind of works for the name, because a reverse paradox, wouldn't that just be something that's easily solvable?
I guess so, but I thought at least she'd put it on in the middle of the ring and Vert Vixen would have to like crawl to the ropes, but it was just sort of like, oh, I'm in the move. Okay, I'm in the ropes.
Yeah.
And then it was the, what does she call her finisher? I never remember.
Teardrop.
To win the match. So a match that, another one that I was sort of like, shrug, sure, fine.
Yeah. Vert Vixen is a good hand. She is not a main eventer. Like, I don't think she shouldn't be in this spot. I don't understand why she was in this spot. I'm honestly shocked the show drew as well as it did, because like, Miyu did what she could with the match. But against an uninteresting opponent and having a 0% chance of losing, like, this wasn't really a match that was going to grab anybody. So, I don't know. This isn't a match I would have booked. It was fine. It was I went 3.5 on it. It's a good little match, not a main event.
And that was the show. After the show, Rika Tatsumi coming out to challenge Miyu Watanabe for the title at Summer Sun Princess. That is confirmed. So that should be a great match.
Yeah, I'm into that.
And looking forward. So two matches already for Summer Sun Princess, the Aja Kong Shoko match, and now this match, Miyu and Rika. And that show is next month at Corican Hall. So hopefully they can get a good crowd for that one. But that was Tokyo Joshi Prism. What else has been going on in the world of Joshi Wrestling? Stardom has had a few shows. They had a Korakuen on June 2nd. Micah, Mina Shirakawa, and Xena, Empress, Nexus, Venus, successfully retaining their artist title over Momo Watanabe, Natsuko Tora, and Tekla. Stardom had some shows this weekend. Interestingly enough, they were on a pay-per-view. They were on, I believe, a new pay-per-view service, which was slightly cheaper. I believe it came to about $10 or $11 US for that pay-per-view.
That's an all right price point.
But I would say that the card probably reflected that drop in price. There was really nothing. There were there were no title matches. Really not a lot of big matches there.
That just shouldn't be a pay-per-view. Just toss that on Stardom World.
I actually haven't even watched it yet, but the reviews are largely that the in-ring stuff, at least, was mostly fine. So lots of things happening. Saya Kamitani declaring herself new leader of Queen's Quest. But as we'll talk about, maybe Queen's Quest won't last that much longer. We'll talk about that in the upcoming shows. Marigold had two shows on the first and the second. Those are now up after a few days delay on Wrestle Universe. In Marvelous, Magenta successfully retaining their tag titles against Brooke Havoc and Unagi Sayaka. The Wave tournament continues in Pro Wrestling Wave. I will say there are a handful of matches up from Catch the Wave on Stardom World, the matches that contain Stardom wrestlers, which is sort of a sad tease because I'm like, someone's there and someone's filming. What's going on?
So wait, none of the other matches have surfaced?
I don't believe so.
That's bizarre.
Yes, but the matches are up on... They are up on Stardom World, but they're very confusing because... I don't know if I just wasn't looking at them right, but they don't have dates on them. So sort of like, what is this match? Let's see. I'm on the Wave channel now. Going in my membership. There are some. It looks like there are some Catch the Wave up. What is this? The 5. It looks like the... May 18th show may be up, which has at least one Catch the Wave match, I believe. But that may be it for the moment. So we'll see. But they are trickling out, and they're at least on Stardom World, some of those matches, so you can watch some of those to keep up with that. Kelly, what's going on in the world of Choco Pro?
We had a title change on the 5:30 show at, Shinkiba, I think? Emi Sakura and Masahiro Takanashi beat the Best Bros, Mei Suruga and Bali Anaki, to win the Asia Dream tag titles. That was a pretty good match. I enjoyed that, and it looks like in the post-match, Mei made a challenge to Emi for the Super Asia title? So it looks like they're going to have a big singles match coming up soon. So that should be really good.
Also happening in the last 2 weeks, everyone's favorite Joshi promotion, Sukebon, had a show. They had a show in L.A., their third show after their New York and Miami show. That is now, I believe it originally aired on TikTok. It is now up on YouTube. The whole show, you know, if you skip the entrances and everything, you could probably get the show done in about 45 minutes. The highlight of the show by far is probably Seri versus Maya Yukihi as the best match there. You know, looking at watching the show, you know, I still think a lot of people go into it sort of thinking like, hey, this is going to turn out to be a great wrestling show. To me, I think it's largely just like a fashion show that instead of walking a runway, they just get in the ring and wrestle.
That makes a lot of sense.
Is sort of what it feels like to me. It feels like the wrestling is very much like, we're going to show you 5 minutes because we know we're trying to bring in like fashion people who don't actually care about this. But you'll sort of like see the outfits, be like, oh, wow, those look great. like see a couple moves where you're like, whoa, that's cool, and then they leave.
Yeah. Well, it's like the news came out that Nick Khan of WWE was at this show, and my first thought was there is a very good chance that he went to this thing not even aware that it was a wrestling thing.
Yeah, that is very true. It seems to me, at least, you know, they have the title, which oddly I figured, Arisa's retiring in August. She's definitely dropping the title to you here, and then didn't.
Well, Arisa Nakajima is retiring. We don't know about Commander Nakajima.
Can you imagine if, like, 6 months from now, the only way we can see Arisa Nakajima is in Sukeban?
I mean, honestly, if the payoffs are good and she's only doing these, like, 5-minute matches, shit, you might as well.
I mean, I will say commentary did bring up that she is retiring in August. They're like, Commander Nakajima, she's retiring. So that was a little shocking. I do have to talk about, and Kelly, I know you haven't seen the show yet, so I'm sorry to ruin this for you, because watching it in real time was very funny. But partway through the show, they stopped and they said, all right, everyone, now for something a little different. World champion Yo-Yoer is here, or something, world champion or some designation of this guy who does a yo-yo. Sky comes out, does not look cool in any way. You know, like everyone else, like Saweetie, they had Saweetie come out and like play her song, which that whole thing was awkward because they were like, well, international recording star Saweetie. And then she didn't come out and then just sort of wandered out, like stood on the ramp and turned around and went back, which was very weird. But it's like, oh, okay, this is fashion and everyone's here. And they had a lot of people like in the crowd. This guy comes out to do yo-yo and it's sort of like, okay, he's doing some fun things. He's sort of flicking it around, you know, sending it up and down. And then near the end, he drops the yo-yo. And at first when he dropped it, I thought it was going to be a thing where like, it was going to hit the mat and bounce up and he was going to like catch it. And that was part of it. And then it was very clear it wasn't part of it because he like awkwardly had to lean over and like grab it. And, you know, the commentary team, which what it was, Kazim and, Renee and, a third person whose name I don't remember. We're like, oh, well, you know, doing yo-yo is hard. And I was sort of like, okay, you know, you miss it once, whatever. He then proceeded in the next 3 minutes to drop it like 6 times where it was like, here's a trick. And people would be like, oh, and here's another trick. And he would drop it. And then it was like, oh, here's a trick. And then he would drop it again. And so commentary kept having to be like, well, yo-yoing, it's very hard. It's hard to do. And, you know, you're in a new environment and you're not used to it. I was just like, oh, Jesus.
Wasn't there a guy like a bunch of years ago doing like the local news circuit as like this yo-yo expert, but he was complete shit?
Yes. Mark Proch, who is on. Well, he was in Better Call Saul and what's the vampire one called?
Interview with a Vampire?
No. The comedy one that was a
What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes, he's on What We Do in the Shadows. He's also in the On Cinema universe, if anyone watches that. But yes, he would go around. He would be, I don't remember the character name, but he would get on local newscasts as like, hey, I'm going to these schools to do yo-yo tricks, you know, for charity. But then he would get on and they would interview him and he was a very bad interview and he would talk about like very awkward things and then would like do terrible yo-yo tricks and that was like the whole thing. But yes,
I wonder
not
if
that bad,
someone
but...
like trying to do his bit but being bad at that.
but I will say, you know, I think the whole thing is, you know, I talked about, oh, it's a fashion show just where they wrestle instead of walk a runway. And, you know, I thought the show was fine. I was sort of like, oh, yeah, this is good. I sort of put it on and I was at times doing other things and sort of keeping an eye on it because you don't really need to watch it that closely. And it just seems like a thing where there's not much is going to happen. Like, they defend the title, I guess, technically. But really, there's no other story, like, ongoing. There's no reason you need to watch every show.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no ongoing story. You know, in the first show in New York, you know, there was a whole thing about, oh, Stray Cat, she's not in a group. You know, oh, these groups are recruiting her. They want her to be in their group. They're trying to get her in because she's talented and they want the Stray Cat in. That's totally been dropped. And there's really no other story except it's just like, here's this group. They're going to fight. And they come out and they do a 7-minute match and then they leave. And that's that. And it seems like they, Tsukiban, is just interested in being like, we're just trying to get in newspapers and be like, oh, fashionable. Like, we're changing the face of wrestling because we're fashionable. And it seems much more now like a fashion play, because the whole thing when they started, everyone was talking about, oh, they're going to make this TV show and they're going to, you know, have anime sequences in it. And that seemingly has disappeared. I haven't heard about that in since really the first show. And it just seems like they go here now to be like, we're a fashion show and hopefully the local papers will write about us.
Yeah, that makes sense. The more that you say that, the more I'm like, yeah, no, that seems, because especially with the person funding it is fashion stuff. So, yeah.
So that is what was happening in the last 2 weeks of Joshi. Before we go on to the next 2 weeks, of course, we have to do our usual Joshi Fantasy League standing updates. I will say the next episode, which should be released on June 24th, we will have the pick swap for each person. So officially saying it now. So Kelly, start preparing.
I've been doing a little bit of research. I've got some candidates in mind.
We'll let Liam know, and next week we will announce. So for the next 2 weeks, that fifth person you'll get points for, then we will switch, and then starting the episode after that, that fifth person who you knock out will not earn any more points, and your new person will start earning you points. So what is happening now? Well, Kelly, I'm sad to say, still stuck under 200 points at 192 points. And Kelly, you've got a tough decision here, because
yeah,
most of your wrestlers are very close to each other. Currently, Veni, the low point getter at 31, Miyamashita at 32, Utami at 35, Takumi Aroha at 37 and Rina Yamashita at 57. So we know it won't be Rina.
I'm thinking it's Miyu.
Doesn't wrestle a lot, although does in the United States, but I saw, especially this week, loses a lot in the United States.
Yeah.
I think is the biggest problem. I think she had something like 3 title matches in the last 2 weeks and she didn't win a single one.
Yeah.
So, well, you've got 2 weeks to decide. And then about 91 points ahead of you is Liam, 283 points. Liam, if I had to guess, Liam has the person I think is the front runner for Wrestler of the Year, but nowhere close on Point Getter of the Year. That would be Sari, still all the way down at 27 points. Then Chihiro Hashimoto at 46, Aoi at 56, who is really coming on strong. Suzu Suzuki is an interesting one at 66, although I believe they just announced she is out injured now, so don't know when she will return. And Unagi Sayaka up, still the number one point getter by just a few points for all of us at 88 points. So that leaves Liam at 283 and still in first place by 9 points. 100 points ahead of Kelly. That would be me at 292 points. Very obvious. I won't have any surprise. The wrestler I will be replacing, that will be Ibuki Hoshi, who is out because she is pregnant and has only earned 29 points. Next, Miyu Watanabe at 43. Saya Kamatani at 52, but really pulling the weight in my team. You with 82 points and just 2 points away from Unagi Sayaka. Miyuki Takase with 86 points, which is hard to believe. She wrestles, she does a lot of singles matches.
Yeah.
And she wins them, which is really big. 33 points just in singles matches. So 11 singles victories this year. But next year will, or next year, next week, will be the big switch. So we will see anything still possible here in the first annual Joshi Fantasy League. But what is coming up in the next 2 weeks of Joshi? Well, Stardom's got a lot, some Stardom shows and some non-Stardom shows. First of all, on the 15th of June, All Together 2 will be happening. And of course, the Joshi promotions of Stardom and Stardom coming all together to put on a match. Starlight Kid facing off against Azumi.
You won't see this anywhere else.
You won't see it, only at All Together. And maybe one day, 50 to 100 years in the future, maybe they'll book a Tokyo Joshi match as they initially promised on one of these things. Although, frankly, maybe there won't be any more of these things. So it might not matter. But Starlight Kid will face off against Azumi. That should be a good match, but only a 15-minute time limit. So I would put your money on a time limit, a draw happening there. On June 21st, it's back. New Blood.
Hey.
13. A thing I thought was fully dead is still happening. Hanan and Saeeda, the one match announced, I should say, so far. Hanan and Saeeda, the New Blood Tag Champions, will defend their titles against Aya Sakura and Sayaka Karara. On the 22nd, a big day, the first thing that's happening is Bloodsport Bushido is happening. Konami will face off against Maya Fukuda there, so that should be interesting. And
yeah, then, I wonder who wins that one.
And then the big match, or the big show of the day, Stardom The Conversion is their next big show. The top of the card, Micah versus Xena for the World of Stardom title. Sayori Ono will face off against Mika Iwata.
That's a cool match.
For the Wonder of Stardom title, Hazuki and Koguma will defend the tag titles against Hanan and Saeeda. Sorry, I have a fly just flew around me. That was very shocking. Sorry. Sorry, I should say I'm sitting in the dark, which is my style, and the only light is my computer screen, and a fly just flew, and it was very shocking. I did not like that. Anyway, Suzuki and Koguma will defend their tag titles against Hanan and Saeeda. So some big tag days for the two of them. And then just recently proposed, I don't believe officially confirmed, but Natsuka Tora proposing a Oedo Tai versus Queen's Quest unit disbands match. So we will see. Kelly, do we finally get rid of Oedo Tai?
I don't know. I mean, at this point, either one losing, I'm fine with. Like, just I would just love to see a whole unit reshuffle, but like, you know what? Either one of those two, toss them out at this point. They've been around for so much longer than they need to be.
And then on the 23rd, there will be the Women's Pro Wrestling Evil Festival, which will have Stardom participation. Yumika Hoda, Natsupoi, and Sayaka Karara will face off against Dump Matsumoto, Zap, and Natsuka Tora.
I wonder who's taking the pin in that one.
That one. What else is going on? Seedling has a show on the 12th. Seri will defend her Beyond the Sea title against Misa Kagura. And then there's a very interesting set of matches, which is essentially there are two teams, and there is going to be a singles match, a tag match, and a six-person tag. And the pairings will be announced on the day of the show. But supposedly, I think Kelly is reading this ahead of me saying it. The language on the Seedling website says, while each match is taking place, the other players will wait under the ring. Which I'm assuming means during the singles match, there will be 10 people sitting underneath the ring.
Incredible.
The teams will decide and submit the members that will participate in each match in advance. The two teams are Arisa Nakajima, Mima Shimoda, Makoto, Nagisa Nozaki, Veni, and Maya Yukihi. That is one team. Dash Chizako Shuri, Tsukasa Fujimoto, Rina Yamashita, Ayame Sasamura, and Yuki Mashiro is the other team. Also on that show, Ka Kedita will face off against Natsu Samire, and there is a special rule. If Ka Kedita loses, she will remove her mask. If Natsu Samire loses, she must remove her, and this is a direct quote from the website, she must remove her heavy makeup. So that should be a weird match.
Should be a weird show.
Oz Academy has a Corican Hall show on June 18th, a strange show. They are doing the Artemis Royale Championship, first champion deciding match Battle Royale. So starting with this Battle Royale, they will be creating a new championship called the Artemis Royale Championship, which will be a Battle Royal Championship. The rules will be determined at a later time, so don't know what the rules will exactly be, but Akino, Tsubasa Kurigaki, Hiragi Karumi, Natsumi Mochi, Saki, Risa Sera, Maya Yukihi, Miyuki Takase, Tai Hanma, and Kakuro Sekiguchi will be involved in that. The semi-main, Aja Kong and Sari versus Ryo Mizunami and Yu. And the main event will be an age 115 match. In that age 115, Jaguar Yokoto and Miyumi Ozaki will take on the total age 115 team, which will be Hikaru Shida, Momoko Hanazono, Sayaka Unagi, and Tomoka Inaba.
That seems so mean.
It will be a 2-on-4 match.
That's fucked up.
So just a lot of strange matches here coming up. Marigold will have their next Corican Hall show. Some exciting matches announced for that. Mirai will take on the debuting rookie, Minami Komomo. Naoi Ishikawa will take on Nagisa Nozaki. Misa Matsui and Mai Sakurai will team to face off against Natsumi Shozuki and Chiaki. Miku Aono, Koki Amare, Chika Goto will face off against the Gaijin trio of Bozilla, Zeta Steel, and Myla Grace. Victoria Yuzuki will face off against Seri, and Utami will take on Nanai in the main event. So some fun matches there, and we get to see our first Marigold debut happening there. So fun show.
Mm-hmm.
Sendai Girls, they will be participating in Fortune Dream 9, which will be happening on June 12th, and I can't believe there have already been 9 Fortune Dream shows. Team 200 Kilogram, Chihiro Hashimoto and Yu will take on Takumi Aroha and Mako Satomura.
Holy shit. So
that should be a very good match. And then Ice Ribbon has a Corican Hall show on June 23rd. There will be a Triangle Ribbon match. Yuki Mashiro, Unagi Saika, and Mio Shirai will face off there. The Ice Infinity tournament is almost done. It will be Hamako Hoshi facing off against Yuri for that vacant title. And just recently announced, for the first time outside of Stardom or New Japan, it will be the IWGP Women's title on the line. Mayu Iwatani will defend against Tsukasa Fujimoto. So that should be very exciting.
That's wild that they're not doing that on a Stardom show.
They're being very nice.
They're
being very nice. We'll see. Hopefully that helps Ice Ribbon draw a nice crowd, I hope.
Who are they stealing from them in the next couple of months? Yeah.
Yuri, get on over to Stardom. And then, of course, in Wave, Catch the Wave will continue. And that is everything. Lots coming up in the next 2 weeks of Joshi. We'll have lots of Stardom to talk about. Hopefully we can talk about that very odd Seedling show.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to both of the Seedling and the Oz, just a weird shows.
Marigold, and hopefully that Ice Ribbon Cork and Hall will air live, so hopefully we'll be able to catch it somehow, because hopefully they're able to work something out with Stardom or something like that.
That would be nice,
because that would be great. But that is everything that is happening. Kelly, I throw it over to you for Kelly's Corner.
So I am in the process of reading a comic series called Ginseng Roots. It is about it's an autobiographical thing about one of the creator talking about his time as a kid working on ginseng farms in central Wisconsin. And it's very interesting, and I'm learning a lot about ginseng.
Great.
So I'd recommend it. It's a good read.
Maybe the most pure Kelly's Corner we've ever had. Great. Well, that is all we have for this episode. I need to get off this and go kill this fly, because it's very much annoying me and bothering me. But for Kelly, I am Taylor. This has been Jumping Bomb Audio, and we will talk to you in 2 weeks' time. Goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
Hey, everybody. My name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.